Hi, Bobby Halton here for our sponsor, Unimac. Hey, Unimac wants to remind you to take care of your crew with the most complete PPE cleaning solution in the industry. With washer extractors built for maximum performance tailored to NFPA 1851 standards, simple record-keeping capabilities, and free training for your entire firehouse, it's no wonder that Unimac is called on by fire crews across the nation. Check out Unimac at unimac.com/firecrew.
Good evening. We had our intro and our siren warning us to get started here, and I want to welcome everybody in that's either listening live or going to download later, and want to say thank you to everybody who has taken a little bit of their time this evening or over the next couple of days to listen to our podcast here. I'm excited. We have what I think is a really, really cool guest tonight. Gotten to know this guy over the last several years and look forward to doing some work with him here in the upcoming weeks. And we're going to really focus really, really hard. Our primary topic tonight is going to be training at that company level and kind of getting outside of comfort zones. I think all three of us will be able to kind of provide some things on that. We're going to start out, as we typically do, quick introductions, and we're going to kind of jump in right out of the gate here. So my name is Todd Edwards, 30-plus years with Atlanta Fire Rescue, operate Fire Life Training now. Very fortunate, very blessed, very lucky, very lucky over and over again, I guess is a good way to put it, to be able to work with and teach with guys such as our guest tonight, our co-host and Anthony, and just guys from all over the country. So that's kind of where we're at right now. We'll give you some contact information at the end of the show. So let me throw it over to Anthony Rowett. If you could go ahead and introduce yourself for us, bro.
Anthony Rowett, 16 years in the fire service, the last 13 with the Mobile Fire Rescue Department in Mobile, Alabama. I'm a captain here, work downtown, get to do a lot with Todd, be a part of fire life like he talked about, as well as Port City Fire Training, and have got to know our guests on the show for, like Todd said, the past couple of years at different conferences and things like that. So looking forward to the conversation tonight.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, and without any, I'm going to give this gentleman a chance to introduce himself. Very unique story, and if you're comfortable with sharing your story with us, brother, how you went from way south to way north in your fire service career here fairly, not all that long ago, and kind of share that with everybody listening so they kind of get a vibe for you and what you do. So, Mr. Duffy, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. First, I want to thank both of you for having me on. It's definitely a pleasure and always nice to talk to some people, and especially ones that you highly respect and have come to know over the years. So quick story is I've been in the fire service for almost 17 years. November will be 17 years. And majority of that fire service career being down in Florida. Recently this year, family comes first. I'm a firm believer in that. And my wife came to Michigan to visit her mother, who was not doing so well and unfortunately was put on hospice care. So she called me while I was at work in Florida, and she's in tears, and explaining to me how she didn't want to come home. She didn't feel like she could leave her mom, and she just didn't know what to do. So, I just kind of threw all the faith in there and said, we'll figure this out. You guys are the most important thing to me. So fortunately, I came up to visit her and was able to take a written exam that the state of Michigan requires for every firefighter candidate. And before I got on a plane to go home back to Florida, I got a phone call from the fire chief for the city of Wyandotte. And we talked for about an hour or so, and he thought I would be a good fit. So I came in. I actually flew back on my birthday, February 8th of this year, and had my interview on that birthday and left with a job. And I've been working for the city of Wyandotte in Southeast Michigan ever since. And I've totally blessed. You know, I couldn't ask for anything more. It's a great department. I work with some great individuals, and I'm still getting to do the job I love. So I couldn't be happier with making that decision.
And let me just, I want to say this because I think Sean said something that, you know, I hear a lot of people speaking throughout the country that talk about family first and those type of things. But I think when, you know, you hear of a story like Sean's, well established in his organization in Florida, and he prioritized his family over everything else and still be able to do the job he loves and he's so passionate about it. That's truly, you know, just not just talking it, but actually walking it, brother. And I think that's an incredible thing. And I think Sean's already starting to establish himself in that part of the country and excited about some things that hopefully we'll be able to kind of throw out there to everybody later on this evening. So let me start tonight, because I think it would be a poor taste on our part as a podcast and as instructors and firefighters in this country, not to mention this past weekend with the 20th anniversary of 9/11. I think that we remember that day. We all have our own memories. I think we tend to, and I think as a whole, we know our brothers haven't forgotten, but I think as a whole, a lot of people in our country have truly forgotten that day. And I think even more so have forgotten what it was like on 9/12 when everybody was together as one. This past couple of years, seeing our firefighters attacked, our police officers attacked, proves to me that we have forgot what it really means to be public servants sometimes, or what we really do for the public. And it's it can be very flustering for all of us, but I guarantee everybody who takes time to listen to this podcast, the three members of this group tonight, we'll never forget that day. The 343 brothers that passed, were at over 250 have passed from 9/11 illnesses since that day. That those people, those families, our brothers are always going to be in our prayers and thoughts. And this is one of the reasons we do what we do, I think, is in their memory. So I want to get right into this tonight. And I want to start with Sean, because I've heard some of Sean's lectures, and I want him to share some of his class, in a sense, I guess, will be a little bit of this. But I want to ask Sean the very first question tonight. And Sean, why do you think, and this again, when we do our show, we're very opinionated, so, throw whatever out you want. We don't give a shit. Why is training so important in today's fire service, Sean?
Oh, man. First off, I want to say that training is something I'm incredibly passionate about, and I hadn't always been that way. You know, I fell into the realm of just show up, put your stuff on the rig, and run the calls as they come in, because I didn't know any better. You know, nobody showed me any better. And unfortunately, I failed a lot, and I had to learn a lot of things along the way. So when I started realizing that, it doesn't cut it just to kind of figure it out when you get there. You need to have a plan, and you need to draw on those plans pretty frequently if you want to be successful. It's not an ego thing. If anything, it's a pride thing for me. You said you wanted to be a firefighter. Everybody said that. You know, whether you work and you're blessed to be at a fire department that only runs fire calls, or you have to do fire and EMS, I mean, you knew what you got into, and you knew this was going to be a lot of work and dedication. And fact of the matter is, people's lives depend on you. You know, in split seconds, you have to make choices, and they may not always be the right ones, but you have to be able to make them and be confident in those decisions. So for me, that's why training is so important. You know, we're at a fire ground now where it's ever evolving. It changes every day. You know, our fires are hotter, they're faster, you know, all of those things. And, you have to be able to get ahead of that. And, you know, that goes from preparedness from the time you walk into the doors on shift to, you know, how are your hose lines set up on your rig? Are you good in the realm of search and rescue? Are you good in fire attack? Do you truly understand all that stuff? And there's really only one way to do that. It's time and time again on the training ground, figure out what works and what doesn't, coupled with real world application. You know, we can have all the great ideas that we want and all this should work. This is going to work great. But reality is the fire ground is the greatest equalizer. And you will figure out very quickly, one, where you stand in your training and abilities, but two, where your thought process lies. And, you know, you have to own that, and you have to realize that, hey, what you thought worked or may have worked didn't for whatever reason. And it's time to go back to the drawing board and start hitting the streets, dropping hose on the ground, doing searches, whatever it is that you have to work on. Start fine-tuning those things so the next time that you make that run, you're better prepared and equipped to have a successful outcome. So that's why training's huge for me. We don't get second chances. You know, it's real time here and now. So we've got to be able to do it to the best of our ability the first time.
I don't think you could have described that much better. I will add that I think that, you know, if you sat down, and anybody can do this, and I've done this in some of the classes I do, write a list down of what's expected of us today on the, not just on the fire ground, but everything from hazardous materials, EMS, search for people lost in wood. I mean, the list is absolutely tremendous, whether you're on a big department, small department, medium size. If you just start listing out anything, everything that you can encounter that you may be called upon to do, it would probably blow some people away to really look at what we're required to do, what's really expected of us. And I always try to fall back, and I use this a lot in my officer development training. It's not just about being a little, and I love the pride thing. I'm about that too. I don't want to look stupid on the fire ground. But the other thing for me is, the better trained I am, the better I am for the people working with me as well. The better trained our firefighters are, the better off, and that's how they're going to go home to their families. And I always try to instill that with young officers, that the more we're doing, the better trained we are, that's how we're going to keep our firefighters safe. And avoidance isn't an option in our line of work. We can't show them, go, oh, man, that house really is on fire. What do? We can't avoid it. That's why they called 911. So we've got to be prepared. And the best way I can keep myself safe, my firefighters safe as a boss, is to make sure we're all trained up to the best of our ability and our skills so we can put out that fire, make those grabs, do what we're required to do. I did get a text back from Captain Rowett had a little interruption at the homestead with one of his children. He is back. Anthony, same question. Why is training so important to today's fire service, bro?
Well, to me, I think it's really going to dictate the success you have on the fire ground for a few reasons. One, we do everything where we have to make so many decisions in such a fast-paced environment and so quickly that we rely on so much instinct and experience in the past that we've had. And at least in my department, a lot of people probably say the same thing about theirs. We're not making as many fires as we used to. So our younger guys aren't getting as much experience as fast as it used to be. So you have so many decisions to make. You have so much information to process. And when we pull up, or as conditions are changing and we're moving through, the incident is starting to progress and we're either winning or losing and how we're going to react to it, that if you're having to think about how to do something, you're not being able to focus on what's going on and lead yourself to success because your mindset is too much into how to get the task accomplished versus what needs to be accomplished. And things like the actual skill of it, the muscular skill of doing something, of stretching a line or doing a search, all of that can be acquired and improved in training versus necessarily on the fire ground, where a lot of the decision making gets improved on the fire ground through experience. So by training, you can create a situation where you know how to do the skill. You're not having to think about how to do it. You can think about what you're doing and how it's affecting the overall operation and what's going on and how to react to it or what decisions are being made, and focusing on the operation itself versus how to actually do the task. And all of that's handled through training. So that, and then in training, like you guys said, the pride thing, and I definitely don't want to look stupid on the fire ground. That's the last place I want to screw up. My guys know we can screw up in training all we want, so we can correct it there. We don't ever want to look bad on the fire ground. But so that's a big part of it. But also, like I talked about, you have the decision-making part, but also just the actual going through it. And you can do it in training and gain comfort to where, like I said, the decision-making part is now not something you're focused on. But through that comfort, You're bringing that calmness back to yourself. You're not making something bigger than it is on the fire ground. You're able to focus on it because you're calm now. You know how to do what you need to do, and you're going to get it done. And all of that comes through repetition, through doing it, through training. It's why I don't like necessarily always training at a training center. I like to go out and train in neighborhoods and buildings, be responsive. Even if it's just stretching a line to the front door of a vacant building, you're gaining comfort in the neighborhood you respond in. So the setbacks you're used to, the building destruction, you start talking about how it's laid out, looking at, you know, the building, where is it laid out, where's the bedrooms, where's the kitchen, all these kinds of things. And it's making all those things such a calm manner that when you have to go to it, especially for a younger member that doesn't have as much experience, it calms them down and allows them to focus on what's going on, not how do I do what I need to do? How do I stretch this line? How do I flake it out? That part can be handled. That doesn't need a fire to figure out how to do that part. That part can be handled, and then you can focus on the fire itself.
Yeah. And I think if nobody is clear on why training is so important, then I think you just heard, you know, at least real two good answers from Anthony and Sean, and hopefully some guys will be able to take that away. There always seems to be a slight debate, and I think it's probably more so in, I guess, what some of the parts want to call themselves progressive, where higher education overrides practical or practical overrides higher education. And to me, it needs to be a true balance of both. I mean, not just from a chief officer standpoint, we talk about education, but education for our firefighters as well. I can take you into a flashover simulator and show you flashover, but unless I'm able to educate you on why the flashover or rollover is occurring at this moment, then it really doesn't match up. And I think that goes hand in hand. If you look at it, a lot of the science now with UL, it's not just the training components that we're able to see, but we're able to understand and educate ourselves with the science that goes along with why water's riding along that ceiling and the effects it can have on the cooling and rebound heating, if, you know, when we're not flowing continuously. And those are components, I think, from an instructor standpoint, we really need to be focused on. We talk about education and practical training being one entity instead of just two separate things. And I wanted to kind of get your guys' feedback. I know from an education standpoint, the priority and the practical, but what is your feedback on the importance of combining those two elements with our training today? I'll start with Sean. I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, no, that's good. I didn't want to talk over anybody. it's insanely important. I mean, I know there's a lot of things that we do that are important and shouldn't take a back seat, but, you know, like Anthony was suggesting too, like, you know, that fire ground, man, that's where we get the chance to do the things that we're there to do, you know, and if somebody else could do it, they would do it. The fact of the matter is they've called us for a reason. We're supposed to be the experts. We're supposed to mitigate whatever that emergency is. So when you talk about training and education and application, you know, any training that we take or any education that we receive, like I kind of alluded to earlier, like that's all theory until you have the opportunity to truly apply it and figure out if it works or not. So the problem that I see is there are a lot of smart firemen out there, and man, they can recite the IFTA manual, they can recite, you know, UL studies, they can do all of that stuff, but they truly don't understand why or what it even means. It's just fire service parody. They're just repeating it because, hey, somebody told it to me and it makes sense to me, so I'm going to repeat it and try and pass that on. Problem is you have a missing element there, and that element is the application. There have been numerous things that I have taken, classes that I've taken or you know, education that I have received, where you think this is it. Like, I get to put this into play right now. And you find out very quickly, like, oh, that's a cute idea. It's not going to work. And if that's all you hang your hat on, you know what I mean? Like, if that's all you're hanging your hat on, you've already failed before you've done anybody any good. And there's this thing that I personally believe where is, you know, everybody likes to talk about risk versus benefit analysis and stuff like that. And while all that's fine and well, we need to understand that the most dangerous person on the fire ground is the one that's just shooting from the hip, right? And when you have the education, but you don't have the ability to apply it correctly, that's exactly what you're doing. You know, you're just shooting from the hip because you're not going to be able to know how the two of those correlate together, you know? So unfortunately for me, I think the two is you have to vet this stuff. And I get it. Like, you know, we aren't going to that many fires anymore, but that's not going to stop you. You know, I happen to live pretty close to Highland Park. Highland Park is in the middle of Detroit. They have a ride-along program. You can go there. Anybody can go there. You can ride along. You could do whatever. So if your situation is that you are not in a department that sees a lot of fire duty, make that possible by stepping outside and giving yourself the opportunities to truly test your education in the settings where it's going to make the most difference. That kind of, I know this is a little off topic, but it kind of bothers me in the fact of we have a lot of educators, and I use that term loosely, out there who do exactly that. They take a class, they read some material, they really get at regurgitating information, and they start teaching people. Problem is they don't have those experiences behind them because they never made sure to get them. So to me, that's dangerous. You know, whenever I'm being taught, I want the person teaching me to teach their true experiences. And, you know, education is only going to take you so far, I guess, is the point of this rant is, you know, try and put in sets and reps as much as possible in training if you can. But, man, you got to get out there and you got to let the fire ground or whatever emergency incident you're operating on determine to you what works and what doesn't. And if you're just not making those runs, it's just not going to happen for you.
Yeah, and I've heard both you and Rose say this, and I think I want us to avoid this, and this is where I like to have these conversations, debates. If I'm not a numbers guy, but I like to look at trends. I think is more my see. And we've only really seen about a 3.5% drop in home fires over the last couple of years. So it's not a monster, you know, over the last 10 years, like a 3%, you know, 3.5% drop in home fires. We're still seeing, you know, somewhere in the range of over 300,000 residential fires a year. Obviously, you know, 300,000, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot when you look at the size of the country, but even though fires may be down in certain parts of the country, there's still a lot of fire going on. And, you know, I think that, you know, sometimes our firefighters like to be, you know, especially a firefighter, a slow house, even in a busy department like Atlanta. Oh, I'm at this slow company. We don't have to worry about that. To me, those are the ones that are even more needing the training or need to be staying on. If I go weeks and then a month and then 2 months without a job, oh, fires are down. Well, what about if we have that fire today? How prepared are we for that fire today? And I know, not arguing, I agree, yes, we can look at the trends and see numbers going down, but we're still going to do a lot of work throughout this country, and I want our guys to always have that in the back of their mind. And I don't want to get off that topic of the education and practical training, because I know Anthony has education background and he believes in the practical side. So Anthony, if you can kind of fill in some of that.
Yeah. So kind of like you alluded to, I've been to a lot of school through having a master's degree and all that. So obviously that says that I believe in education, but I believe it's only a part of it. I think the practical side is the most important. I just went through a lot of education because it gave me a lot of answers to why. It gave me more understanding, and that's just how I'm good at learning. I like a full understanding of things, so I went through a lot of school. But I'm never going to think that that's the more important aspect of when it comes to educating a fireman, because the practical aspect is where, at the end of the day, it comes down to, you can have a lot of knowledge in your head. If you can't apply it with your hand, you're not really any good at all on the fire ground. You're pretty useless if you can't get the job done. So you've got to be able to bring that knowledge that you got through education to your hands. And you can do a lot of education and take a lot of classes, go to a lot of school, get a lot of degrees, and it really not even relate to your job. If you're taking getting all these degrees and you're still a junior firefighter in the back, you're doing all this company officer stuff, someone's going to be making those decisions and letting you know what to do anyway. So you're putting a lot of time into that aspect, but is it really applying to what your role is on the fire ground? And it's not in that situation I just gave as an example. So you can't be giving up that practical training environment where you're actually going out and doing it, getting the muscular memory and all this of how to do what you're supposed to do and how to read a building, how to stretch a line, how to do a search, how to vent a window, how to vent a roof, how to throw a ground ladder, all these things that force a door. That should be very simple. If you're focusing on so much on the education that you have to actually process, and you're over there spinning the baton when you're standing in front of the front door trying to figure out which way to set the tool, did you really use your time at all in a useful manner to what people need you to do? So it's only a small component of it. The true nuts and bolts of what we do is hands-on. So you have to focus the majority of your time to that practical application. I go back to what I said last time. That's why I like to train in vacant buildings and things like that in our run area. It gives us that practical environment where the guys are working in an environment they're actually going to respond in and things like that. But I think it also, going back to something you said, Todd, and Sean hit on it too, with the combination is that education, you have to also take the practical side of the application of it, and not just yours, of experience of the senior members. So you can look at, like, the UL study. Look at the first one they did. The science wasn't wrong, but this experience of senior members around the country came in and said, a component of this is missing. More is needed. Our experience tells us this. Our experience tells us this. And this is not capturing that. So they go back and do the study. Was the science wrong in the first one? No, it was just missing something. So that practical, what I'm going to call practical education, because they got an education through practical doing the job, told them, hey, something's missing. A very important component of this education process is missing. They go back and do the second study, and look what comes out of it. Now we have the full picture, and it's saying what the experienced guys were saying, the guys that had all this experience from all these years, came back, and which one was proven to be the best situation. It was what it was experienced for years. So education is great, but you have to take that practical, not just you practically going out and doing the hands-on training, but taking into account the senior members' practical experience and applying it, because what they have, you can't offer to a book. You can't learn it any other way but to do it, and they've already done it. So what they've experienced has value. What they can teach you sitting around a table has value, especially if you haven't made that fire before. So it's a combination of the two, and you have to be able to apply it. But to me, it's the big thing of, like you said, with the UL study, the rebound times, flowing and moving versus hitting and moving, things like this. It's that understanding of it, of being able to now read conditions and say, I need to flow and move. I'm not getting a knockdown on this fire. It's going to rebound on me. Before I even move, I'm going to be in the same situation I was in. I need to just keep the nozzle open, move down this hallway, and I'm creating a safe environment for myself so we can actually be effective. And that's putting the two together. And that's where it all comes down to. But at the end of the day, even if you can put the two together, if you can't physically do it, you haven't put the time in to do practical training and be able to do the skill set, again, what use are you? Because it's great to have the knowledge in your head if you can tell somebody about it or tell them to do it. But if you can't go do it, what role are you actually filling on the fire ground?
Yeah, yeah. No, and I agree. I think that, and to me, we'll kind of come into that here when we talk about some of the challenges with, you know, in-service training as well as just getting guys out there to train. And I think that is, I know talking to company officers and different guys throughout the country, they find it just such a challenge to get their guys motivated to go out there and really, you know, put in the work sometimes, or, you know, the sweat equity or the skills or the knowledge or whatever. So what I found, a lot of trial and error, I think, is a good way to put that, is sometimes being able to I'm not a video guy where, you know, if I hear an officer, you know, say, hey, we're just going to do a video today in a class, I'm probably not going to be a real fan of that guy. But when you can break down the video and put that together with your practical training, you can, you know, start getting, I think, that buy-in a little bit. Obviously, there's a whole host of things I think we're going to touch on here. And what I really want about some of the challenges from, you know, from you guys tonight is really to kind of speak on how do you take, oh, I don't know, that mutt that's sitting in the back row of the day room that's asleep by 10:30 in the morning and motivate him to go out there and train, and some things you guys have done that have worked, and they motivate guys back into training, whether it was showing them the importance of this, or, you know, just some of your tricks and tips for anybody who's listening who I'm sure is dealing with that guy next shift that they can't get off their ass sometimes. So let me start with Sean on that, about, you know, some of the challenges and some of the things you have found that kind of works.
Yeah. So I will say this, by no means, this is just my experiences, you know, by no means do I have the answers to any of it, but I used to be that guy that would get frustrated, right, and be like, hey, you know, you lazy sack of shit, get up, like, why are you even here? And I just found out that, you know, being aggressive, you know, because I was passionate about it, and I just wanted everybody to be on the same page, and I wanted to be pushed as much as, you know, the next guy, and just I didn't ever want to settle. And, you know, when I was working with guys like that, it was very frustrating. And my first approach to it at a young age was aggression, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
just approach it head on and be like, come on, man. Like, and that's just not a good way. For whatever reason, these guys are already disengaged, you know, and that could be for a multitude of reasons. Maybe something's going on at home, financial reasons, like you just don't know. So it's twofold for me. Like, I found that actually getting to know an individual for who they are and what interests them goes a long way. For example, there's some guys in the fire service that, you know, for whatever reason, they're hanging around and they're great at what they do when they're asked to do it, but they don't want to do it unless they have to. And, you know, I've come across those guys and asked, like, hey, what do you do when you're out of here? And, you know, you get different answers. Some of them work on small engines. Some of them mow the grass. Some of them do that kind of stuff. And what I found is in training, small bites, right? Like, instead of coming out full bore, hey, we're doing this today, you're going to like it, and whatever, give them – you got to be able to create some buy-in. So, for instance, you know, I worked with a guy who had his own lawn care company, and he was always tinkering on these small engines. I am not a small engine guy by any means, but I wanted to train, and I knew I was not going to get this guy out stretching fire hose or getting him in bunker gear doing anything. So I took that advantage of that opportunity, and although it may not be job-related per se, it is job-related because I got to check out these saws and everything every day, and when something goes wrong with it, whether it be on the fire ground or just in-house during your daily checkoffs, I wanted to know how to fix it. So I started picking this guy's brain. Hey, man. You know, like, tell me about this. Like, you seem to be interested, and now he's talking, you know, and we're in a conversation. He's showing me these things and whatnot. And because I gained that trust and he knew that I wasn't just like some guy that was going to judge him 24/7 for the fact that he wasn't doing the things that I was doing, it actually made it easier for me when I'm out in the bay, like just throwing line down, just trying to figure out different loads. He would come over and he'd start asking questions. Hey, man, like, what's wrong with our load? Well, nothing's wrong with our load, but they're, you know, I'm just trying to figure out different ways. You know, we got different areas that, you know, triple layer is just not going to be effective. You know, maybe we need to look at something different. So this is what I came up with. This is why. And, you know, did he pull that line? No. But did he watch me deploy it? And did he ask questions about it? Absolutely. So in my mind, that's a win. right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a win because although it wasn't physical hands-on, I'm still giving him that knowledge and I'm giving him a voice, right? Because had he come back and said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, I would have said, why? Well, ask me why. Do you have something better? Show me something different. And again, now you're back in that engagement. So that's one thing that I found that kind of works. But the other thing that I found is a lot of guys are like that because they don't feel comfortable for whatever reason throughout their career. Training has been something that has made, you know, it's been annoying to them, or maybe they were embarrassed at a certain time and, you know, and that just never got addressed. And that attitude just was left, you know, they're like, oh yeah, you know, he's a lost cause, move on, which is a disservice to that individual. So again, coming back to training and how to get that guy fired up who is that way, just be a normal person. And when you're out there and you're training and you're doing stuff like that and you see that they got a crappy attitude and they don't want to be out there, like, man, just relate to them somehow. Be like, yeah, man, it's hot out here, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Yeah, well, we'll be done with this soon. But, hey, you know, it's good training, right? And just make that small talk and then say, hey, I noticed you did this or whatever, like – somebody showed me this and it worked really good. Like, try and do this next time. And, you know, they're out there, they're training. They're going to have to get another rep in. Like, you know, that's the requirement. So if they happen to do what you said and they're successful, man, it is so amazing to watch the excitement on their face that they actually did something and that it was a lot easier than what they were used to and that they were successful. Now that person doesn't have that bitter taste in their mouth about training. They actually have an excitement of, hey, what else can I do? You know, I was able to do this. Like, what are we doing next time for training? You know, like any fresh new ideas. And then throw it back in their court. Hey, listen, you know, I know, like, we stretched line last shift. Like, what is something that you'd like to train on next shift? You know, like, I'm going to leave it to you. Like, whatever you want to train on, you figure it out, and I'm all yours, man. And, again, you just create that buy-in. And, you know, I'm not going to say it's going to work 100% of the time, every single time, but, you know, I have been fairly successful with it and seen some positive outcomes. So that would be my recommendation on how to approach those type of things.
Yeah, no, I like it. I'm 100% agreeing with everything you said. And, yeah, we're kind of hitting two subjects at the same time here, so I'm really good at that with where we're at on this. Anthony, same thing. Some things that – and I'll be honest, I was a lot more like Sean, you know, at a younger age, but I was very fortunate that I came up underneath a hard nose, you know, one of them crusty old veteran kind of captains that firmly believed in doing drills. And we were going to do a lot of work, but every job, I don't care if it was a room and content, a trash fire in a bathtub, or, you know, two alarm, you know, three buildings going fire, we did an on-scene training. And he didn't give a crap about 3 o'clock in the morning. Shit, we're already up. We're going to train. And we would do something on the fire ground. It wasn't, you know, always practical stuff, but, I mean, learning how to, you know, an easy way to pop open window sills, you know, to check for extension and how to get into the bays, you know, below the window and check for extension there, and pipe chases and all those little things that you're not going to pick up at the fire academy with your 2-pallet fire class bullshit. He was showing us at these fires, and that carried every fire. So next apartment fire, he didn't have to remind us to make sure we opened up the pipe chase if the fire was on the first floor in the, you know, the stacked apartments we had throughout the city in our first do. We knew we better get in there and check and make sure we didn't have fire running up to those common pipe chases and extending all the way up to the attic. So every opportunity he had was like that. But, you know, as I moved up and everything, I was kind of like Sean. I kind of expected, because our whole company was into training. Our whole, you know, all 12 of us, our bosses, everybody in our house was train. And so it was a little bit of a loop when I moved out of that company as a lieutenant. I was shocked that these guys were like, well, we don't ever do that. We don't ever do this. So a huge learning curve going from, you know, that company to another company, busy company. so they felt like they didn't have to train. And so it was a weird changeover that I had to learn kind of the hard way sometimes about how to get guys bought in. How about for you, Anthony?
Yeah, so kind of similar to what you just said. I mean, when I was a firefighter on the back step, I worked for a guy. He was known to train more than anybody else in the city. That's why I wanted to work for him. I hired on real young and was like, man, I want to work for that guy. First, he works downtown. They're one of the busiest companies in the city, and they say he trains every day. I just want to learn. Like, I'm ate up with the job. I just want to learn, so I want to work for that guy. So I worked with him, and it was just a known thing. Like, we're going to train every single day. You came to work, and you just knew. So that's the environment I knew. And then, like you said, every fire we made, he would take us in there, and it didn't matter if you were the first day there or you were his senior guy. Everybody went inside. Once we were doing overhaul or the investigator was doing their thing or it was after overhaul was done and everything, whatever he saw he wanted to be his point that day, we would go in there and he would teach us about it. He'd give us a class. One of his big things was exactly something you just said, like cleaning windows out, you know, framing the window out, things like that. So that's all I really knew. Like, that's the environment I knew. I didn't know anything else really was. We're going to come to work. We're going to train. You go to a fire, you go back in there and you talk about it and you learn something about it. You didn't just go do it and pat yourself on the back and say you did a good job. You go back in there and you come away with, yeah, maybe you did do a good job, but let's go learn something as well. Got promoted and went to, you know, I've been in the same company in every rank. So had good firemen there. So I was the driver, which for us, it takes on like that senior man role. And we had really good guys. They were young and they were motivated and they were every day coming in, hey, what can we go over today? So that's what I knew. Got promoted and was blessed with good guys. So, and you've met them, Todd. You know all of my guys.
Yeah.
They show up to training every chance they get. They come to work and it's like, hey, boss, what are we going to do today? What, can we do this? And they're not at all shy to say, hey, I was thinking about it. I haven't been over, you know, this in a while. And I don't really remember, you know, like yesterday, we were sitting there. It's kind of a slow day during the day. And they came down, they were like, hey, since truck four is sitting here, we haven't been over the new struts they got on the truck in a while. Can we go back over them, do a little mock drill and work on setting them up just so we go through it again, put our hands on it. Oh. And then we end up all the extrication equipment, just going through it again because we don't carry it on the engine. So the truck was sitting there. They weren't busy either. So we took the opportunity to go over something we hadn't done in a while. And they're not afraid to say, hey, I haven't done this in a while. Can we go over it? Not a big deal. You know, let's go over it. And so I've always been blessed with that, of working with good people. And then got a few guys assigned to us out of the training center that, we'll just say, didn't meet that mold. They didn't, you know, they didn't want to come to work and train. One of them happened to put in a request in the training academy to be assigned to us because he thought, when they kept saying, because we help out with the academy a lot and go down there, we're real close, and we don't mind going down there and helping with the recruits. And he kept hearing, yeah, that crew, they train every day. Well, he admitted to us, he thought they meant workout. Like, oh, yeah, they work out every day. And it was like, no, bro, we're going to go train every day. Like, you can do that later, but we're going to go work on getting better every day. And that wasn't really his take on it, and it didn't sit well with me because I've never been around a different environment than what I just described. It was always around guys that wanted to be there. In that they were there because they wanted to make a lot of runs. They didn't mind not getting any sleep. They wanted to make a lot of runs. They wanted to do the job. They wanted to train every day. We're coming in, hey, boss, what are we going to do? And now I had this guy that wasn't bought in. And exactly what you guys said, I was like, hey, man, get with the program. You got to go. You know, like, this is what we do, this. And one of the senior guys, he's on the ladder truck in the house, but comes up to me. He's like, hey, man, you're going to have to find another way. Like, you're just not getting through to him. You've never come across this. Every guy you've had has always been bought into the fire department. They love the fire department. Eat, breathe, sleep, mobile fire rescue. So you got to find a way to get through this guy. And I was trying, and it just didn't work out. And that's cool. It's nothing personal. We're friends on the side. It's just we probably weren't meant to work together because our mindsets were a little different. But so my biggest challenge, like with who I work with, like I said, you know them. Like, it's not getting them to want to train. It's finding a way to keep it fresh to them so they're not doing the same thing every day, or keeping it realistic enough that we go do something. And the hardest problem I have is I've worked in that firehouse a long time, so there's relationships with building owners. We go do a building pre-plan, and they let us stretch hose lines through their buildings a lot if they're not busy. Apartment complexes that let us train in their buildings, and so that's like a such an awesome, realistic addition to your training. But keeping it fresh, and the hardest thing we have is if we're not in the firehouse where we have, you know, at least spare bottles sitting right there that we can use, maybe like one spare air pack that's in a storage room, and keep our packs in service to make it realistic to where these guys are doing stuff and going on air without having to get off duty. Because your chiefs aren't going to let you get off duty every day. And what good are you if you're at work but you're never in service? So that's my biggest challenge, is keeping it fresh enough for them that they don't get bored with it, that they continue to improve, but it also stays as realistic as possible. I was kind of what you guys said, a little too aggressive, and had to learn a way to kind of finesse people. But I still run into it when I get people detailed into the company. They're there for a day. They're just trying to get through, you know, the 24. But they're, a lot of times they're coming into it with a bad attitude because they know we train every day. They're like, man, it's a threat to their status quo. You know, they might be in a company where it's okay to be 10 toes up every day, and we're just not going to do that. So you don't try to beat them down with it, but you show them a little bit, and maybe if you're not being an ass about it and they realize they're learning something, then you might spark that light bulb in their head for a minute. And even if they only get one thing, hey, they can bring it back. Maybe it'll help them out one day, and it'll help somebody out. But the biggest thing I've seen in my career that really makes a challenge for training was when I was new. And it didn't affect us because we knew we were going to train every day anyway. Captain Ray, that you were going to train. But we had a chief, and we'll just say he was very, very high up in the fire department, and he used training as discipline. And to this day, and it was going on long before I got on, and I caught the end of his career. I was only there like the last few years of his career. But with guys that were there for that, that hasn't faded. Like, training is discipline to them. So if they get called to the training center, it's not to go do a drill. It's not to learn a new skill or have a class. That's what do we do? What are we getting punished for? So you can't use it as training, and you got to find a way to end it on a good note. And that'll help people, you know, transition to training is not a bad thing. But if you let it end on a bad note, they got a bad taste in their mouth. They don't want to do it again. So you at least got to do it enough to where they end on a good note, and you're not beating them down at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love everything both of you guys just got done saying. I think that attitude about training is definitely, and I want Sean to maybe chime in here, because I know what he does with building the culture thing, and I think that training really is driven by the culture of the fire station, the culture of the organization. You know, the example Anthony just gave. We had a culture in my house that we were going to do something. And, you know, we had guys that didn't want to work with us because they knew we were going to do something. You know, but that culture of our firehouse actually rubbed off on other firehouses too, because they saw the benefits. And I think that changed attitudes about training. And again, in-service training to me is totally different than conferences. We'll touch on the outside, you know, on our off-day type of things. But, you know, the in-service training, you don't need to go and lay out, you know, 1,000 feet of 5-inch for a drill. That's just stupid. But it does need to stay fresh. It needs to be kind of – I was very into let's do hardcore intense drill today. And then other drills would be more on the educational side. Then we would wrap that in, and I'm a big believer in realistic when we talk about time drills. It's amazing to watch. There's a huge difference when you see how long it's actually taking you to go from jump seat to front door versus just going through the motions. I mean, anybody can go out and stretch a line off the rig and pack it and be done in 20 minutes, but actually dress it all the way out, getting on the rig, coming off with BA, getting to the door, you know, masking up. Then I have to always go on, you know, we'd pop air, and then we'd take it right off so we didn't burn through cylinders. But we would time those events to see how much, where we could improve at. And realistic drills such as that, getting to a roof, if you're going to speak to on ground ladders, how long does it take you to get the ladder off the rig, in position, Charlie side, second floor, and have that all on timing? And I found, those events or that those trainings, while short and intense, were some of the best drills we did because, one, sometimes I didn't tell them what we were going to do, and I would just throw it and say go, and other times we were trying to see how long it would take us to run that evolution or to run that skill set and mixing different skill sets together, such as getting dressed on the rig, getting, our last engine had the old automatic, had to flip the switch and wait for the button. I think our last engine, it was almost 29 seconds to go from the top of the engine to a position where you could actually get it off the side of the truck. So we knew right then we were going to lose almost 30 seconds to get our ladder off the truck to get it to a window for a quick BES grab. So we built those little factors in there, and then we, added in things like, all right, we had a position here. Now how long is it going to take us? So those things are really easy ways to kind of go back to what Roette was saying about keeping things fresh by combining different skill sets to challenge the guys to be better and challenge the guys to improve on, hey, that didn't work. Why don't we try carrying it this way, or why don't we try throwing it this way? What about if you carry this and I carry that? And it sparked conversation. It improved us as a company, and it kept things fresh and consistent and different all the time. So I can go out and pull a crossley 45 times in 1 month if I wanted to, as long as I was doing something to make it more than just the parking lot stretch, stopping in front of a vacant house going, Charlie Side's heavily involved, go. Everybody had to be dressed out. Engine had to go into pump gear. Line had to get stretched to the Charlie Side. And we would time that event, and it was always interesting to say, man, we lost time here. 9 times out of 10, the guys were to the point that, hey, Cap, let's do that one more time. And we would literally go around the block, and we'd run the whole drill again. And at the end of the day, what we were finding, we would run a drill like that and still only be training for about 2 hours out of the shift. And that's, that left us a lot of time to do all our other responsibilities, duties, and, obviously downtime was always important to me as well. But kind of on that subject line for Sean about attitude.
Well, Todd, can I chime back in on something you just said?
Yeah.
So something you said that it was what I learned from my boss when I was a firefighter that I talked about is, like you said, just driving down the road and just throw it on them sometimes. He would do that to us all the time. Not all the time, like every day, but and he'd want to throw it on you when you're, coming back half asleep in your fifth call after midnight. But you'd be riding down the road, and he'd tell the driver to stop, and he would say, this is the condition, go. And he would time everything. And he never used it as like a, man, y'all suck, that one sucked. He never did that, but he always made a point to let us know how long it took. So we were sitting there, mm-hmm. and in our head, it was like, okay, we're all type A personality people. We're competitive. So it's like, okay, well, that was the time today. The next time he calls us, I'm going to be ready. We're going to be even better. And it built a lot of the guys working together when he wasn't around. He would go to sleep earlier in the night. He was towards the end of his career, try to get some sleep because we knew once the bars started closing, it was going to be bad. So he would try to get a little extra sleep, and we'd stay up, go downstairs, and work on stretching lines so that, okay, next time we'll be better. Or he would throw it at us like, hey, we're second in. We're coming in right on engine eight's tail. They said they got a line, but they got a person out the window in the rear. The truck's delayed. I want a 24 to the rear this fast. So he'd go to sleep. We'd be out there throwing ladders. We'd be doing things like on our own. It kind of like influenced us to be even use that competitive drive of that type A personality. And he never used it as a – he never even told us like, hey, that one sucked. It was just like, okay, mm-hmm. it was your time. And he knew, I guess maybe just knowing our personalities, how competitive we were, that when he went to sleep, we were going to go work on it. But another thing he did was, wasn't just like, if you were to – so we have firefighters become swing drivers is what we call them, to step up and drive. To drive for him, you had to know every street in the run area and every hydrant. But even if you weren't driving, what he would do a lot of times was – and sometimes he'd working into those, but he would just – you'd be driving – and he would just say, he always say, Mr. Roette, Mr. Rowett, how many plugs at the intersection of so-and-so and so-and-so? And it would usually be like a, you know, an intersection like 5-6 blocks ahead, so you couldn't look out the window and see it. And because we, in the high-rise district, we have a lot of intersections that have multiple hydrants. So he would do it, and it wasn't just like, hey, I know where that is. It would be, where's the hydrant? How many do we have at that intersection? And then if we did a drill and there was multiple hydrants, typically is when he would do it, he would break out, okay, where's the mains and which sizes are they? So did you know which one, where the big mains were? And he always worked that stuff in, but it was almost, you know, sometimes, especially a newer guy that he knew, if you knew you were wanting a swing drive, you knew you were getting tested. But he just worked it in such a nonchalant way that you didn't feel like you were being quizzed or called out. It was just like part of the day. But you were learning,
yeah.
And then if you got it wrong, it was playing on that competitiveness again, like, man, I just got it. I just let the guys down. I didn't know that one. I got, all right. So you go back, and we all had maps printed up with all the hydrants marked on them in our lockers. So you're going back, and you're flipping through it. And, you know, that throw it on them, it made it real. Like, I mean, there's been fires we pulled up to that you pull up, and you didn't get dispatched to a fire. You just see smoking around the corner. You just pulled up. Now you got to get your gear on. You got to do all this. And it made it real, but it kept it fresh. You know, you weren't expecting
right.
it. And no one got mad about it. Like, it was 10 minutes out of your day to do everything, talk about it, and put it back up and go back. You know, but you felt like you accomplished something. So,
yeah.
Just to build on
I'm
what you were saying about that.
Yeah. And Sean, on the with your program on the culture and everything, how do you think that can benefit from the training side of, you know, when we talk about culture and training and those type of things?
Well, first, going back to what Anthony said is we got to get away from, one, treating training as a punishment, because it's not. It's actually very 100%. Rewarding. You know
yeah.
what I mean? And then two, we've got to step away from the checkbox mentality of, okay, fine. and I know this is going to piss a lot of people off, but I'm good with it. It's fine. I hate Fire Rescue 1 and training, online training and Target Solutions and all that stuff, not because they're bad programs. You know, they do allow us to get training in on busy days and stuff like that. But the reason why I dislike them so much is because it has become a replacement for real training, you know,
mm-hmm.
and there we are back at the checkbox mentality. And it's like this, hey, did you get your training done for the month? No. Okay. Well, you're past due. Don't make me write you up or whatever. And it becomes this thing like, oh man, I don't really want to do this. So there's really no learning that takes place, because let's be honest, what do we all do? We click on the thing, we let the video play, we go next, and we click next, 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 and we take a test. Oh, man, we failed that one. Great thing that I get to try this again, right? And then you just take it. So although the intentions were pure, it's kind of become bastardized, you know? So with
yeah,
the culture
no,
of
I agree
training,
with
that. Yeah, and that's really the thing, like, and there's lots of, like, theories on what culture is and stuff like that, and I'll just speak to what it means to me. And what it means to me is it's very simple. It's really the it's what is your department's, like, personality, right? If you're okay with your firefighters just pencil-whipping training and not really being good, then you've got to be okay with the fact that, hey, they burnt down a whole city block and – they haven't really saved anything, and, you know, they're not doing all the things that they're supposed to do, but hey, we showed up and that's all that matters. Right. If you're not okay with that, as you should be, then the personality of your organization needs to be focused on the fact of, hey, look, we can no longer establish a culture of things that have created buy-in for the negative, right? We have to create a buy-in for the positive. And the thing is, again, if everybody could do this job, everybody would. The reason why people do this job is because it's a select few that A, decide that they want to, but there's even a select few that actually physically can, mentally and physically, right? This is a demanding profession. So if you're not able to foster that buy-in of, hey, we need to be physically fit, we need to be mentally fit, how do we do this and still have fun, right? Then you're kind of missing the mark. And we were talking a little bit ago about in-service training. I think that has kind of become a negative thing to where it is, as a training culture goes, has taken a hit because, let's say, when I was in Florida and it's 100 degrees outside, like the last thing people wanted to do was go outside in bunker gear and train. But you know what? Reality is we fight fires in 100 degree weather, you know.
It's amazing.
And exactly, right? So you're just conditioning yourself. And the thing is, you don't want to beat guys up to where they're like dreading this. But it's important that you make them see like, hey, I'm going to put you in a very uncomfortable situation. I'm not going to ask you to do any more than I know you're capable of doing, and then expanding from there. So rather than spending like 3, 4, 5 hours on drills, maybe we scale it back, especially in service, and we focus on little sections of that each shift. So if we know that we're going to do like a large scale evolution, like you were talking about, Todd, where, hey, you know, from jump seat to the door, it's X amount of time. If we know that's what we're working towards, then rather than bringing everybody out, getting them their gear and drilling for hours on that all day, break it down. Hey, listen, guys, first of all, we need to be able to get in our bunker gear in a timely manner. So let's start there. We're going to start doing bunker gear drills right here in the apparatus bay until everybody can get this in under 90 seconds, right? That's our drill for today. If everybody can do it, hey, kudos to you. You know, we'll do something else, you know, but I'm asking for at least an hour of your time, right? Then next time you do it, build upon that. Hey, last time we did bunker gear drills. This time we're going to do SCBA drills. Now, next time we're going to do, you know, hose line deployments and all this so that you guys know that at the end of this month, there will be a large-scale scenario where you will be expected to do all of this in a timely manner. And then we're going to truly gauge where you're at, right? And we'll critique and, you know, give guidance as necessary from there. That's a much more manageable thing when you're talking about a training culture, because although guys come in and they know they're going to train, they know they're not getting their asses kicked all day. And I think that
right.
The biggest turnoff to training, especially on duty, is, hey, man, like maybe you got a newborn, right? And you've been up all night with that kid. I get it. The last thing you want to do is come into work and bust your ass in a drill. But if I can make it a little easier on you and say, hey, listen, you give me 100% for this short amount of time while we're doing this drill, I'm going to go ahead and I'll let you go take a nap. Shower up, take a nap, do what you got to do. I get it. But this is important too, right?
Yeah. And if you look at the studies, I think just, you know, not to interrupt you, but if you look at adult learning, short and intense is a lot better than long and drawn out any day of the week, especially when we talk about in-service drills.
That's
how I always operated. I didn't know if we, you know, I'm a nap guy. I mean, I'm not a nap guy, but my guys were nap guys. I was a firm believer that once we were done with the house for the day, any, you know, whatever BS duties we had, and we did our drill, after that, they were on their own. I encouraged them to go, and they loved it. I mean, they all took it. They were all about getting that nap in. But I didn't know what we were going to be doing at 0-300. So I encouraged that. You know, we did a hardcore intense drill. And then after that, they were on their own, you know, just be on the rig when we get banged out. Other than that, I think that's, you know, kind of the better direction for in-service training is short and intense versus a 7-hour PowerPoint program that you did at home and you're sitting at the kitchen table doing that crap.
Oh, yeah. And here's the thing. Once somebody's bored, you've lost them. It doesn't matter. As soon as they hit that point of boredom, forget it. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You've lost interest. I mean, I relate the fire service to children. You know, I got two daughters myself, and I'm going to tell you right now, those kids constantly want to be entertained. And the minute that you lose their interest, you wonder why kids like act up and do all these other things. And you're like, what is wrong with you? Like, what is going on with you right now? It's not necessarily because they want to be that way. It's just whatever's going on around them is not captivating to them. You know, it's not capturing their attention. So they're disengaged and they could care less, you know,
right.
And as adults, we're the same way. I don't care if it's a hands-on training or a lecture or something else. If you don't have a way to keep people engaged, you've lost them, right? And the minute you've lost them, your training has gone to shit. And I'll tell you this, When I was a young fireman, we did a drill, and you never knew when this drill was going to happen. And you could be anywhere in the firehouse. You could be doing anything. They didn't care if you were in the shower, if you were taking a shit. They didn't care. When that intercom came on and they said, my baby's burning, you dropped whatever it was you were doing, and you ran out to the apparatus bay, and you got bunked out, and you got your air pack on in less than 90 seconds. And if you didn't do it, guess what? You were doing for the next hour until you did it. It's not because they were being assholes. It was because that is legit, like you alluded to. Like, you don't know what you're going to be doing at 3 in the morning. Dude, how many times have we all been on duty and you know, we get toned out for a box alarm, and it's boom, just like that. Or, like, we've had a crap day where we're just getting hammered, and the only thing we want to do is go back, shower, maybe eat if we can, or sleep, and that's just not reality. You're going on to the next run. You know, you have to be prepared for that. And that was their whole mindset is, hey, this is going to happen. This is real. So get good at it and understand that this is your expectation. If you can do it, then go back to doing whatever it was you were doing before we interrupted you. If you can't, then we're going to make sure that you can. And I'll tell you what, you did not want to be the guy that was last getting dressed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just not it. But I bring that up only for the fact of, not to ramble, but to say, like, there's a lot of things that we can do. There's a lot of aspects to our job. So there's a lot of different ways we can implement training into our day-to-day routines while we're on duty that don't have to be cumbersome and time-consuming and still have value.
Totally. I mean, I think that's so spot on, everything you're saying, everything Rowett said. It's the mental approach, I truly do believe, though, that, man, once you establish that attitude and you show guys the true benefits and you try to find, I love your example about the small engine mechanic and things that interest them and Rowett's guys out there training, you know, because they want to be better for their boss. And it doesn't take a lot. I don't think anybody comes on or into our job and wants to suck at this. And sometimes you just got to find the right way to approach them, find some ways to pique their interest. I'm a bit, like I said, I'm not the greatest guy with numbers, but I'm a huge fan of stats and facts. And if I can show somebody, you know, why May Days are happening, you know, using the stats and the facts off of Project May Day and when they're most likely to occur and why we don't, you know, like, you know, Atlanta used Lunar forever. And I started looking and researching and looking at facts and doing classes, and we dumped that because it doesn't work under stress situations. So those are things, if I can, you know, and sometimes it does take, you know, if you got that, you know, that guy in the station who is reading the dictionary and Wikipedia all day long, he's that guy who knows everything. Sometimes that's a great way to approach that guy. He may not be reading shit about the job, but you go, hey, there's a 42.5% chance that your leg's going to fall off if you don't do it this drill this way, and you can prove to them why we do certain things. That can be a motivator for people. And, you know, I always like using the example, who do you want coming into your house? You know, do you want you coming for you? And those, you know, little examples like that, man, as small as they sound and as much as they're used, I think sometimes, can go a long damn way in finding ways to motivate what some guys have considered unmotivational people. And we've all had those guys. I mean, I've had guys that were so motivated, but there's a disconnect somewhere, and those are some difficult individuals some days. But, you know, as officers and instructors, man, you got to keep pounding that drum and finding something.
Well, and you know, it's like you said, and I know we got another topic to get on, and I don't want to respect everyone's time, but here's the thing. I don't want 10 guys in my firehouse that are all good at the same thing. I don't.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I agree.
All of us have things we can work on daily. I mean, that's going to be our entire career.
And if you can't understand that, then, you know, maybe you have to ask yourself why. Why is it that you feel the way you do? Because, look, you know, and I'll bring this in. I'm sure I'll get made fun of for this, but it is what it is. I'm a paramedic, right? So guess what I have to do? I have to do EMS runs. It is what it is. And I can't stand when there's six damn paramedics all doing the same thing, barking orders, and you're like, hey, listen, I need to do something different because it's going to be beneficial for everybody if you do so. Uh-huh. It's no different in the fire ground or in the firehouse, man. Like, if everybody's good at forceful entry, then who's pulling line or doing the search? If everybody's good at search, then who's good at fire attack? Like, it is imperative for our success as a team that everybody have their niche. And when you're talking to people who, for whatever reason, are not engaged in the fire side, they have a niche, whatever that is. You just have to find it. And then once you find mm-hmm. it and you start talking to them about that and you start learning about what, like, excites them and gets them going, then you can, over time, use that to your advantage to kind of steer that into the job, right? Like, I work with a captain who loves fishing. He's a great firefighter and everything else like that. He loves fishing. But you know how annoying it would be if all I ever did was talk to him about the fire service and you know, training and doing all this other stuff? He'd probably be like, go the hell away, kid. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
I get it, right? So you have to be able to relate to people on a personal level and figure it out. Now, I know that he likes to fish on his days off, and I can learn about that stuff. So when he says, hey, what did you do on your days off? Well, it's no secret. I like, I like being a student of the craft. So I'm going to say, oh, I read this fire engineering article, or I took this training class, and I learned this, 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 and this. I think it's pretty neat. Numerous times that captain had said, oh, really? You want to show the rest of us today? Now, was that my intent? No, it wasn't. But is that a win? Hell yeah, that's a win. Right?
Hell yeah.
And that's the point I'm getting at is, like, at the end of the day, aside from being firefighters and medical providers and special operation team members and all those things, we're still people, right? So when it comes to the things that drive us and motivate us and we want to be good at it, we have to be good people, you know, persons too, right? So learn that skill of how to connect with the guys that you work with and you spend a third of your life with, because you know what? That's important too. You can have all the training you want, and you can be the most badass firefighter out there, but if I don't know anything about you, then I can't help you when I really need to help you, right? I can't do any of those things because you're just a coworker at that point, and that's not what this mm-hmm. job's about. So I just wanted to throw that out there real quick before we moved on, because that's something I do feel strongly about, is that passion can be blinding, right? We're so passionate that it can be like blinding, but it can also be advantageous. So we have to learn how to use it on both aspects. Use it to our advantage of when we're training, you know, and use it to relate to one another.
Yeah, and I teach the same thing when I talk about from a leadership standpoint. You know, you can't be and I agree. I think sometimes our passion, and I, you know, when you said, as soon as you said that, I kind of laughed myself, because my brother, my buddy Anthony over here on the other line is that guy. He's that guy you just referred to, that he tries to talk fire and standpipe shit to my wife. My wife,
hey, you leave
like,
Miss Kathy alone. She listens
to me. I don't care.
poor Anthony.
But,
she listens.
She does listen, and she goes, Rowett never talks to me about anything but standpipes. What is wrong with him?
Well, and correcting your mistakes.
Well, that's true.
I've
you do have to correct me, too.
To her. Yeah, the things you mess up in emails. I have two copies.
But that is such standpipes. A fine line. And I do teach that with officers, too. I think that's such a great point. I'm so glad you brought it up. I'm going to jump to this last topic I sent to guys. I don't know if everybody saw this. I did not mess up this email, but I do want to jump to this, and because it kind of leads into where I want to make sure we finish at kind of tonight. I hear and I know, and let me say this, I am the biggest advocate for firefighters. I don't care if you're a volunteer, industrial, wildland, part-time, full-time, big city, small town. You really need to experience going to conferences outside your four walls. Even better, get outside your state sometimes is even better. Firehouse Expo is going on in Columbus, Ohio. I'm crushed I'm not there. It just didn't work out with the instructional part that I was supposed to be a part of. But you know, we just had FDIC, the biggest, baddest training conference in the entire country and the entire world in all reality. And I talk to guys all over the country all the time, and so many of them have never been outside their four walls. And I get it. FDIC can be a very expensive endeavor if your department can't afford to send you a Firehouse Expo. But I think what's been really cool to see happen over the last, really, in all reality, the last is probably 7 years, but in the last three especially, I've seen it really blow up where there's a lot of smaller conferences. And I'll give all the credit and all the kudos in the world to Chief Ike's been down there in Pensacola, you know, with County Fire Tactics and the things he's been doing down there in Pensacola, making it affordable, making room rates affordable, making it affordable enough you can bring your family. I think he has really set the bar high for everybody throughout the country who's starting and doing these smaller conferences. And I really wanted to, it's not to, you know, I'm not, you know, just promoting, you know, him, but the overall investment that you have to kind of look at for guys who have always been hesitant about getting outside those four walls, you're not just investing in your career, but you're really investing in your personal growth, yourself, you're investing in your family, because you're learning something that may benefit you or save your life, save one of your brother's lives, save a civilian life by attending one of these training events. And I'm always amazed. One of the things I love going to when I'm at these different training events throughout the country is talking and asking guys, is this first time you've ever been to a conference, or is this first time you've ever been to this conference? And, you know, I love when guys say yes, and then for the next 30 minutes, what I get to hear is, this is the coolest thing I've ever gotten to do. And, you know, guys who are hesitant about going, I think you are doing a disservice to yourself. I know it, you know, when you look at your bank account and go, God, it's going to cost me $700, you know, for if you got travel and hotel and all that. But if you, you know, there's a lot of these smaller regional ones that are going on now that you can go to for $200 and get the same instructors. A lot of these guys that you see at the FDICs are teaching at these small regional events. And I really think it's, you know, important that we talk about this because there are just so many great opportunities out there right now for guys to attend, that even if your department's not paying for it, that you can go, hey, I can't afford this year, but next year I'm going to set aside $20 out of check and go to Pensacola, or go to we'll drop a little hint here, to a conference coming up in Michigan in the summer, or to or to over here to Alabama, events coming up in November. So there are events out there that are affordable, that you get to see the same exact instructors that you see at these other events. And let me start with Sean on this. I know you've been to a lot of conferences. You teach at a lot of cool places. Me and you, not too many weeks or months ago, we were in up at the Lake of the Ozarks doing a conference up there, which is a really, really cool place. David Woodward and his group up there are doing amazing things in that region of the country. And what's your feelings about this, Sean, now that you've been going to so many and, you know, obviously moving from one end of the country to, you know, Alaska, I mean, Michigan, same thing. what are your feelings about enough. That?
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to throw myself under the bus here because I feel that transparency is important when we're doing these things, and people want to know about you and stuff like that. So here's what I'm going to say. I wasn't always the way I am, you know, about training and going to conferences and stuff. In fact, my mentality, because it was taught to me, was if the fire department's not paying for it, I'm not going. And, you know, that's a terrible mindset to have. So I would urge anybody who's listening, if that is your reality or if that's what somebody's telling you, please don't buy into that, because you are hurting yourself and everybody you work with by doing so. Now, the conference is popping up all over, man. I'll tell you, my very first conference I ever attended was the Orlando Fire Conference. And, man, I was hooked from day one, because aside from the training, let's take training out of it for a second, man, you meet some incredible people. And you know, we like to talk about brotherhood in our profession. We relate it to a lot of things. You're not going to get brotherhood anywhere else than where you get them at these conferences. You know, you're in class all day, you meet new people in class, you come out, you get some drinks and dinner afterwards, and you hang out, and it's just like hanging out with all your best friends, even if you met them for the first time, you know. And you want to talk about learning. And I remember the first time I went to Lake of the Ozarks, I'm sitting at the table with Mike Dugan and just picking his brain. You know, you want to talk about an incredible opportunity. Am I in a classroom right now? No, but I'm being a normal person with somebody who I highly respect and look up to in the fire service, who has done more stuff than I'll probably ever accomplish in my career. And he's right there at my disposal to answer any questions I want to ask, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get that anywhere else. And, you know, the one-on-one interaction with the instructors after class and things like that, it's second to none, you know. And that's really what these fire conferences are about. It's not just about, you know, spending a week in bunker gear and doing live burns and stuff like that. It's about fellowship and, you know, getting out there and understanding what else is happening all over the country and taking things back to your agency and saying, like, hey, you know, this person is in a similar situation that I am, and this is how they fixed it, or this is a solution that they made. Maybe I can try and do that in my organization too. And, you know, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but the point is that you found an answer, or you at least found a starting point. And, so I put it to everybody, you know, most people like to drink beer and go out and have a good time, and that's great. I know for sure that you can drop $100 easily on a bar tab. So, you know, think about how many times you do that throughout the month, and there's your fire conference right there. Yeah, you know what I mean? Leather helmets are a big craze, which I love a leather helmet too, don't get me wrong, but those things are like $700-$800.
Yeah.
So if you know, a leather helmet's not going to save your ass. It's not going to save your crew member. It's not going to bring you home. Like, you know, it is what it is. It looks cool. It's a great helmet. However, that's $700 or $800 that if you truly wanted to, the helmet that you were issued by your fire department works just fine. Put that want off and go do something that you need to do, which is attend a fire conference and get out there and start learning what the fire service has to offer. Because, you know, too many people stay in their bubble inside their own organization. That's all they know. And you hear stupid stuff like, well, that's just the way we've always done it. And when you ask why, there's no answer. I don't know. That's just what I was taught. Okay, so you never took it upon yourself to break beyond the confines of your own thought or what somebody else is telling you you need to do, and figure out all of the incredible things that are out there in this gigantic world we call the fire service, right? Just go out there and give it one shot. I promise you, if you come back from a fire conference and you hated it, cool. But at least you tried, because I know what's going to happen. You're going to go, and you're going to come back, and you're going to tell a buddy, and next thing you know, you guys are going to go together, and it's just going to compound. And now you have your own little group that you travel all over the country with, or maybe only to a select few conferences that you enjoyed, but that's your group, and it continues to expand every time you make those conferences, and it becomes something that you really look forward to every year, because it becomes like a family. You know, I joke with my wife all the time, like, hey, I can't wait to the next family reunion, because that's truly what it is.
It
know?
Really is. Yeah, I agree with you. And it's not – I want to make sure guys understand You know, and I know it can be hard at the large conferences that you get that interaction with some of your instructors, you know, in the evening, just because it's such a huge event. But the smaller regional conferences, you do get to sit down with a Mike Dugan or a Ray McCormack or a Chief Isaacson or a Shannon Stone or a Mike Ciampo or an Anthony Rowett or Sean Duffy and ask them anything that maybe you didn't want to ask in the middle of the classroom because you weren't sure how to word your question. But I think guys are intimidated at first, but after that second night and they say, hey, that guy's just hanging out having beer, it's amazing how those relationships form. I have guys that I send information to after conferences all the time that had questions and needed some additional information. I'll shoot them, you know, a PDF on something or whatever. And it really does. You form relationships that you look forward and I've even got to the point where I'll be, you know, I'll ask somebody, hey, you going to be down there? You come to this, you come to that, just, you know, so I know if I'm going to get to see those folks. And that group concept, I'll tell you who's got it. The biggest group of just hardcore, if there's training to be done, there's a group of guys out of Crestview, Florida, and they, I don't know how many classes that I've been a small part of, along with Anthony, that if you put it out there and you throw in the word live fire with it, them guys are coming, and they're coming to do it. I mean, they're coming in a big group too.
They ain't coming one or two. They're coming with a.
They're coming. Yeah. No, they're coming to fight fire. And those guys are. I mean, I literally sit up nights and think if I know I'm getting ready to do a drill with those guys are coming, I try to come up with the most obscure crap I can think of. I cannot find a way to trip these guys up. That's how rock solid this group of guys who just travel, doing their work. They train like beasts. It's just one of the group of guys I always look forward to seeing anytime I know we're going to be in the, you know, Southeast, and they may be in attendance. I don't know if I think they're coming. We've got some one coming up in November right here in Tallahassee, Alabama, and there's live fire. Guarantee there's somebody from Crestview signed up, if not four or five of them are signed up in this damn class, which is awesome. I love those guys, and I've learned. One of the things I think, and I'm going to turn this over to Anthony, one of the coolest things about these conferences, both as a student, I may be there as an instructor, but that's about 10% of my time. 90% of the time I'm at these events, whether it's HROC in December at the beach or Engine Fest out in Washington coming up in a few weeks. I have spent 90% of my time as a damn student, and I always am learning something. It may not even be from an instructor. It may be from some 25-year-old kid who said, hey, we do this, and I'm immediately balled in because I'm like, I've never seen that. I'm always amazed at things that, you know, as long as I've been around, I'm always picking up something new all the time. And, you know, I'll jot down notes and I'll reach out to guys myself and ask questions. And I think that's one of the cool things about going to these events that all of us can benefit from, both the students and instructors. Anthony, your two cents on that thing. I already know how you feel about it, but something else that you find to just be such a huge benefit, I know you're traveling quite a bit and teaching a lot of, you know, unique places as well.
Yeah, I'm going to obviously repeat some of what Sean said because it's just that's the aspect of it. But understand if you're trying to decide if you're going to go to a conference and you're going to make that investment, and especially if you're coming out of your own pocket of what you're going to get out of it, obviously you're going there for the training. You're trying to learn something, and that can't be knocked. That's the main reason you're going to learn something, and you're learning it from guys that they're vetted, they've got the experience, they're not telling you something they read in the book like Sean said earlier and just regurgitating it. These guys are vetted. They're telling you about what they did and what they learned through practical hands-on experience, but also who you might meet, because you get to take that experience back, but a lot of people, I've been through it where, you know, things just aren't good where you work. Like, politics of the city are just dragging you down. And you're having to deal with that. You're going into work. You're making the best of it. You're enjoying your days with your guys. The firehouse is always great, but then you're still dealing with the politics of the city. Well, then you go off to this conference, and you're there 3 or 4 days, and there's no one bitching. There's no one complaining about the mayor. There's no one complaining about the city council. There's no one complaining about the fire chief. These guys are all bought in. They're all there for one reason, and it's to get better and be better firemen, and that's what they care about. So it's like a recharge. You get to go back like, oh, man, I've been dealing with this. It's beating you down. You go off for 3 or 4 days, and you come back refreshed. You've got some knowledge. You can share with your guys. You learned. You improved. But you reset. You're feeling better. You're motivated again. You're ready to go. But also, like I said, who you might meet. You never know who you're going to meet there and what impact they might have on you. Through going to conferences, and I've been lucky. I mean, I'm so close to the beach. I get to go to all the stuff that CF Tactics put on with an hour, 30-minute drive from my front door. So I'm able to – I have access to a lot of things just because it happens to be close. But – and I touched on this with the Firehouse Vigilance podcast was – you might meet some guys that become very close friends to you, and you might meet some people that become some of your biggest mentors. Not all your mentors are going to come out of your fire department. If you're getting outside of your box, you're learning. And some dudes, they may just become that impact in your career and your life, because you're going to meet people here that are legitimately good, just good guys. They're not worried just about the fire service. They actually care about you, and they end up being big mentors. I mean, I said it on that podcast. I've said it before. Everyone that knows me knows who the two people I'm going to say are, but two of my biggest mentors in the fire service don't work in my fire department. You got Todd, he's up in Atlanta, 5 hours away from me, and you got Steve Robertson all the way up in Columbus, Ohio. And big mentors, not just in the fire service, in life in general, family life. And you go there and you find that, and what impact does that have on your career? Where now your circle's not just your little bubble of the fire service. Like, for where I work, where I live, we are a big fire department, 500 guys. That's a big fire department in this region. So we're pretty big. Well, guess what? The bubble of the United States is a lot bigger than 500 firefighters. So you can get out and you have a lot of resources now to reach out to when you have a question. Or you want to, hey, if you guys run into this, we're getting these buildings and we've never run into them before. I know you guys have them. What do you do for them? And learn from that experience, and you're not just guessing. You're actually going to somebody with experience with it and say, what have you guys found? What works? What doesn't? So we can serve the city the best. And then you might have guys, like I said, that just become those mentors for you, both for the job and just in your personal life, that are looking out for you, that you can ask questions to, that you can go to, and they're always going to be looking out for you on both levels. And that's the impact that going to a conference might have for you, fire-wise and your personal life. So it's definitely worth the investment, even if it's just for that recharge. You know, it helps you get – back to being that motivated person you were. You're obviously motivated if you're thinking about going, and it gets you over the hump of dealing with the bullshit that comes with working for a city sometimes and things like that.
I love that. I love the aspect you brought to that, the not just the fire side, but the personal side and the relationships that you end up building with guys from all over the country. You know, always talk about Rob Fisher, who's all the way on the other side of the country. And you know, I see him, you know, 5-6 times a year, but when we're all together, it's like you just spoke to those same guys last week. And, you know, You've established these relationships and friendships that are, they're pretty much unbreakable bonds in a lot of ways.
Well, and when you look at how many of our families are friends. You know, it grows beyond just the people going to the class, because as you get closer, like, I know – Miss Kathy, I know I've met Zach. You know my wife. You know my kids. Same thing with Steve and Jody. All, you know, you get to know everybody, and it becomes more than just a fire department relationship. It's lifelong, actual, true friendships.
Yeah, and so those are things, you know, and you know, for the guys listening, and hopefully, you know, you'll kind of see this. And I want to kind of direct you, you know, as we wrap this up for this evening, please take, you know, when you get time, you know, if you have interest in some things we're talking about, you can visit my website at www.firelifetrainingassociates.com, and I've listed a whole bunch of conferences. So, you know, some I'll be at, some I won't be at, that are coming up that are throughout the country. They're not just, you know, here in the metro Atlanta area, but they're literally throughout the country, all the way through, actually all the way through the first year, as far away as Washington State, Las Vegas. We've got some other ones we haven't even announced yet that are coming up. There's a really cool one I'm excited about that I get to be a part of in West Licking, Ohio. Washington State's Engine Fest, and that's going to be just an incredible event. They've got every engine guy I've ever heard of, and I'm trying to figure out a way how I can not be teaching and just go to all the other classes. But I don't know if Steve's going to let me do that. There's a leadership seminar in Chicago next week that I get to attend, and I get to listen to Ray and some other guys. And so, again, I'll be student 90% of the time, instructor 10. So I'm excited about that opportunity. And Sean and I think Anthony is going to be a part of this. We're in the early planning stages of doing a couple little days up there, where Sean's at up there in Michigan this summer. And we're hopefully going to be announcing something in Lawrence, Kansas coming up this winter. And so there are a lot of very unique opportunities out there for people to attend. So never hesitate. Visit the websites. I've listed all the different websites that you can go to register for these different events. Obviously, County Fire Tactics is a big one. There's three major training events coming up down there between December and March that you guys should, you know, people should really look into. The officer development program is going to be absolutely incredible. I wish I could be there just to be assumed. Just my schedule won't allow that, but there's some other things coming up down there that are just going to be awesome. And so, yeah, I'm excited for what's going on. And I think there's going to be more and more of these events. My only recommendation is vet who you're going to, or vet who you're bringing into your organization as well. You know, just because the guy says he's worked for someplace for 25 years, make sure you know something about him. Ask other people. Say, have you ever heard of this guy, or have you ever seen this guy teach? And make sure they have the message you're looking for your organization, or the message you want to hear or learn more about. And I say that about myself. Steve says it all the time. Rowett, I know Sean believes this. Vet us. I mean, if you want to hear something from Sean Duffy, research him. If you want to hear about Rowett and standpipes, vet him first and make sure this is, you know, what you're wanting. And make sure you get legitimate guys and you're attending legitimate events when you get to pick and choose what you're going to. And that's how I kind of wanted to, you know, close my part out tonight. And I'm going to let Anthony and his little closing remarks, and then we'll get to close it all the way out with Sean. So go ahead, Ro.
First off, Sean, thanks for coming on, taking your time out to talk with us. I think you really had some good points tonight. Really liked some of the things you said, man. It was a good talk. And I think a lot of people can gain a lot from the things you were saying. But I agree with Todd. Like you said, we all say it, man. Vet who you're listening to. I say it all the time. Vet who you're bringing in. Vet whose stuff you're reading. Make sure they're telling you from experience. But if you got questions, you want to talk, anything like that, Facebook, Instagram, Port City Fire Training. You can email me, portcityfiretraining@gmail.com. Or like Todd, I'm on his website. He's on mine, www.portcityfiretraining.com. And I'll be kind of busy through the end of the year. Not this weekend, but next weekend I'll be up in Richmond, Virginia. That's one of my – I think it's an awesome conference. They do the Perfecting the Craft Conference, the 350 line. John and them guys put it on. Really supports a great cause, so I like going up there every year. Then I'll be out in Tyler, Texas with FD Tactics. Todd's thing up in Tallahassee in November. HROC, obviously, if you know what HROC is, it's a high-rise operations conference. So based on what Todd already told you, you know that's probably one of my favorite conferences because it's a topic I like. And then I'll be in Slidell, Louisiana, December 18th this year to close out my schedule for this year with my buddy Mick from Top Floor Tactics. So like I said, if you want to talk, you got any questions, feel free to reach out to me. And Sean, again, thanks for coming on the show, taking your time out to talk to us.
Yeah, thank you. I want to thank Sean, too, so I don't forget. I've done that before, and I have to text the guy and go, hey, man, say thank you. So thank you, Sean, so much. And, Sean, I'm going to let you give your closing remarks, and then I'll say good night.
Sure. First, thanks goes to you guys. I truly appreciate you having me on, and let me talk a little bit of my passion about training. I truly appreciate it. Like I said in the beginning, both you guys are not only friends to me, but definitely considered mentors as well. And I definitely learned some things tonight as the conversation unwound. So thank you for that. As far as me, you can get a hold of me if you want to get a hold of me. Personal Facebook page. You can email me at duffy558@gmail.com. We have a Facebook page, Build Your Culture. We also have one on Instagram, too. So those are some of the ways that you can reach us. If you're interested in anything we do for search, engine work, truck work, any of that kind of stuff, just let us know. Also, going along the same subject that Anthony and Todd were touching on, if you have any questions about anything I say or anything that I'm teaching, please reach out, man. I am not shy to answer those questions. I'd actually caution anybody who reaches out to individuals and is hesitant to provide information or just really can't answer the questions that need to be answered, but they're supposed to be the subject matter expert, if you want to call them that. Just make your own opinions about things and make sure that you are getting the answers you need. And, what better way to go directly to the source for that? So fact check, that's what I can say. The other thing is I'll be at the Firehouse Expo. I do a search class, searchable versus survivable. I'll be doing that at Firehouse Expo this week on the 18th. So I'll be there and then in Ohio a couple more times for an engine and truck class by Todd Shepard from Forge and Fire Company. He's got some awesome doors, so he's going to be doing doing some search and stuff like that over there in Ohio. Prioritize the Search, Chris Kessinger with Citizens First. He does an amazing job providing some search training and brings instructors in from all over the country to do so. And then we'll be going to Arkansas in November and kind of closing out the year there doing that. Be having Corley Moore and Howard Reinwald and Kyle Ramagas. All those guys are out there doing lectures, and then we're going to be doing hands-on, again, more truck and engine work. Searches, roof ventilations, things like that. So, pretty full for the rest of the year. Got a couple things scheduled for next year. Looking forward to what's ahead. But that's about it for me. Again, thank you guys. I really enjoyed tonight's conversation and being a guest on your show. So I greatly appreciate that.
Well, thank you, and thanks for Ro, keeping us going and handling all the technical stuff for us, and all I got to do is, ask questions, so it's pretty easy gig. Guys, again, thank you for everybody listening or downloading. We appreciate it. You have a lot of options, a lot of choices, so we always appreciate any feedback you want to shoot us to email or websites or whatever you want to do, and we will see everybody very soon. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you. Have a good night.